Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. 100% engagement.
It's a total disrespect.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Jim White and Simon Jordan.
I don't see that view.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. I'm Jim White, and today myself and Simon discuss Arsenal's thrashing of Sheffield United. Is there now a ruthless momentum building behind Arsenal in this title race? Plus, what's gone wrong with Sheffield United? We hear from the fans who left Bramall Lane early. On and off the track, is F1 in a complete state of flux? Kieran Jackson, F1 correspondent for The Independent, joins us. And are manufacturers missing a trick when it comes to producing football boots for women? Is it an issue that really needs government involvement, or should it be coming from the football industry? This is Outspoken with White and Jordan. Simon, I don't know what to make of Sheffield United. We'll get to them in a second, but Arsenal go to Bramall Lane last night and thump Sheffield United by 6-0. Now, it's now down to Liverpool, City,
yeah,
Arsenal. Is there a ruthless momentum now building behind Arsenal in this title race?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things building behind Arsenal. The emotional intelligence is a question that people ask about their exuberance and their over-celebration, and they look at the season last year and wonder if the emotional intelligence contributed, or lack of emotional intelligence contributed, to them ultimately choking at certain times in the course of the season. But going to where they are now, I think that the result that stands out for me is not smashing a hapless Burnley or a useless Sheffield United or out of sorts Crystal Palace, is what they did to Newcastle. Put aside the game against Porto, because they'll right that wrong in the second leg,
yeah,
of the tie against Porto at the Emirates. But the manner in which they destroyed Newcastle and made Newcastle look like they weren't even in the game because of the dynamism, the ruthlessness, the overall proficiency of everything Arsenal were doing in that burst of period of time in that game where they destroyed Newcastle showed me something. Now, the interesting thing for Arsenal is that if the results go their way this weekend, let's say the two guys at the top cancel themselves out with a draw, and Arsenal do to Brentford, which I expect them to do, Arsenal go into a 3-week Premier League break in terms of fixtures, top of the league. And I think if they go top of the league,
yeah,
I think they could win the league.
There you go.
I think they've got the momentum behind them.
You're saying that for the first time. If they go, yeah, top of the league, they'll win the league.
I think this time round, you will see the emotional intelligence and the change of direction, the signings of Declan Rice and people like that, and the overall resolve inside the side. I think if they hit the top of the league at a time where their destiny is being controlled by them, they will not make the same mistakes.
So I know they've won round the doubters.
I know they've got to play City.
Yeah.
And I think this league will come down to who doesn't slip, because games, I think everyone will beat the sides around them. I think when they play one another, that will be the slippage. And Arsenal can take advantage of that slippage by going top of the league. Now, it's not me all of a sudden flip-flopping over. My gut feel tells me that Man City will win the Premier League and the Champions League. But there's a part of me that looks at it and goes, if these two cancel one another out on the weekend,
yeah,
and on Sunday, and Arsenal do their job, they go into a break top of the league, and I do not think they'll make the same mistakes they made last year.
So they're no longer bottlers. What's changed?
They've learned lessons. clearly they've learned lessons. And if you don't learn lessons, there's nothing wrong with making mistakes. There's nothing wrong with learning from the experiences of the past. There's something wrong with not. And I don't like the signing of Kai Havertz. I know he's scoring goals at this moment in time, but I don't think he's added that much value to you for the kind of cash contribution it cost you.
Yeah.
But I think there is an irresistibility. They're an irresistible force right now. The only question is our Manchester City an immovable object? That's the question. When irresistible forces run up against immovable objects, you tend to have an outcome that is almost neutral. I just think that if Arsenal hit the top of the table, there's a distinct possibility they'll stay there.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
I'm reminded of the phrase up the blades this morning because the blades are anything but up. They're going nowhere in an upward fashion. Sheffield United losing 6-0 at home to Arsenal. But the stats tell their own story, Simon. Rock bottom. Sheffield United's last four Premier League home games, an aggregate loss of 21-2. Sheffield United have won 3 from 27 played. They've lost 20. Mm. They sit bottom of the Premier League. And Chris Wilder spoke afterwards, and it's got us thinking.
What you'll notice and what you'll see, and maybe you might see a little bit more now, is the introduction of the younger players as well, because I thought we were better. I know the game's gone, and I know Saka comes off and other things, you know, they drop down a level, but, you know, that might be a route. It's been a painful season. It has been real painful, and painful season is a lot of broken and damaged players out there. This is what the league can do to you, especially when you're off of it and they're on it, and you have to try and close that gap somehow, and when you don't close that gap, they make the gap look huge. So, yeah, there's some decisions to be made, of course. I've talked about, you know, there's a lot of other things that are getting reviewed at this particular time for us to get back. The supporters love the football club. I totally understand the supporters that left when they did. We're all hurting at the moment, every one of us. We have to meet. The coaches have got to get together. We've got to see what direction we're going to go in between now and the end of the season. But, you know, we can't have this as just our stock home performance and home result, because, you know, it's just totally unacceptable for them as supporters who love the club and me as manager and leader.
Simon, the last thing he would want to do post-match is to face up to the media, front up and give his reasons as to why that came about last night and where Sheffield United find themselves right now. But his choice of words in there, Chris, will he think later? Yeah, I'm not so sure I got that right. There are a lot of broken and damaged players out there because this is what the league can do to you. No, this is what they've done to themselves, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, you have to give some scenarios regarding Sheffield United that they didn't help themselves at the beginning of the season. There is, you know, a club that wanted to be sold, an owner that doesn't seem to be invested in the club anymore, and some of their best players being sold. You know, in Sanderberg being sold and so on and so forth. So, they didn't help themselves, did they? They didn't give themselves an opportunity to be successful as a result of that. But there's a part of me that, if I was mean-spirited, would say it couldn't happen to a nicer fella. But the reality of it is, and I'm not being mean-spirited, so wouldn't say it.
Why have you got this thing about Wilder?
Because I just don't like what he represents in football management, and that's my view. And I've not got anything. I've not seen anything from him in his managerial career besides his initial assault upon the Premier League, where I thought he was brilliant and a breath of fresh air, and everything that football management should be about. No apologies for being in there. We're here because we merit to be there, and all that sort of stuff. What I see from him now is like a cuckoo standing around waiting for other managers to fall over so he can jump in their jobs. You know, maybe his mate Paul Heckenbottom might have something to say about how good a friend he thinks he is. I don't know. Maybe we'll see. But the thing about Chris Wilder is that he's supposed to have gone in there and given them the ability to overcome adversity. What a pathetic, snivelling statement that has broken the players. What about adversity? This is what you've got, your supporters. I'm a great believer that supporters and fans should stay and watch their team. And the key term is supporters. But you've got to give them something to support. So this idea that it was streaming out of the ground after 20 minutes, I'm not surprised, because you can't play the way they're playing at this moment in time. Teams like Arsenal can do this to you. But they've had it done to them on several occasions now. And that's about the culture of the club. He was brought in to make it better. I don't look at Sheffield United's team and think, man for man, that Luton have got a much better side there. I know Russ Barkley's setting the house on fire right now, and it could have gone either way that way. But I don't look at Luton and go, well, you've got much better players with much better culture, and they've got the same challenges.
So what have they got that Sheffield United don't have?
Well, a better manager, in my view, and a more galvanised squad of players, which is the manager's responsibility.
You see, you made a very good point earlier on, though, Simon. Echoing in all of their ears were Prince Abdullah's comments at the end of last season as they headed to the Premier League. And remember what he told me up in Covent Garden.
I think the last 2 years has been really stressful, not to myself, but also to my family, to my daughters, to my sons. Living like game by game, result by result, it really takes a lot out of you. And I feel tired, I feel exhausted, I feel burned out. I feel that I need to get a break. I told you, we're on record now, and people in the future may hear this. If I get out of Sheffield United, and even in the future by another club, I will always be a Sheffield United fan. You can count on that. It got in my heart now. My intention is to sell, but it's not guaranteed yet.
See, are we now witnessing the results of a disengaged owner?
Well, yeah, of course you are, because what you're basically doing is saying that you... I mean, come on now. You got relegated, you bounced straight back up again. You haven't had it that hard. Try spending several years in the Championship. Try owning a football club that you don't get the success from, that lots of other owners have had to deal with. Look at Steve Lansdowne at Bristol City. Whether I like him or not, he's been at Bristol City forever and a day, pumping tens of millions of quid and had no upside.
Yeah.
So quit that whining.
That's true.
The bottom line is...
He threw you out of boardroom, didn't he?
No, I threw a cup of coffee at him in a boardroom.
Oh, right, sorry.
But that's a different discussion.
That's better.
But the principle of what he said there and the actions that follow it, because then you sell your best players when you go up to the league and you're not invested that heavily, and your only answer is to go back to something that was evidently broken first time round. Heckingbottom may well have had to go, who knows, right? But he went back to something that had been broken previously and been broken by the manager's attitude.
Yes, yeah.
But this owner has not set the pattern. That was a day, I'm telling you now, I don't care how disenfranchised you were, and I was disenfranchised in 2004 when we got promoted, but when we got promoted to the Premier League, I was re-energised. That owner was walking around like, woe is me. You've just got, you know, you've got the keys to the safe by getting into the Premier League.
Just got up.
So he sets the blueprint. Then ultimately Sheffield United have gone up. They were competitive and they were compact for a period of time, and now they're just a joke. And I feel sorry for their fans, because their fans are... Sheffield United was a club that whenever we played them was a team under Warnock that I always felt that if you could beat Sheffield United, you had something about you.
Yeah.
And when we did eventually beat them at Bramall Lane once upon a time, we got promoted that season. And there was always this feeling of Sheffield United were a club of substance. Right now, they're a little bit of embarrassment to themselves. Their players, their manager saying that they're broken and can't overcome adversity, I think is pathetic. I do think it's pathetic. I think you need to have some substance and some backbone. And he's building a ready-made excuse in there now, I'll play the kids. Oh, right, okay. So the senior pros can't cope with it. So what you're going to do is expose the kids to it now, are you? Oh, that'll be helpful in their development, won't it? So when they start getting smashed, his idea is that you get around this by not making players be accountable and having substance.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. In any other walk of life, whether I like Chris Wilder or I don't, this guy should be getting the sack. The performances are poor.
Wilder should be getting the sack.
Well, how can you make a case for him not?
He's only just get the job again.
Well, how can you make a case for him not? If you judge football by the standards that other people judge it, which is when managers come in and the results are so bad, why would he be immune from that conversation? Whether his owner is in part complicit, which I think he absolutely is, I think the club deserves a little bit better than this. And if you're going to go out swinging.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Sheffield United, do you yearn for life back in the Championship? It's a horrible question, but it's one of, that I would think is pretty realistic this morning. Phil, good morning. You're a big Blades fan. Were you there last night? Did you leave early?
Yes, I left just before half time. My reason for doing that is not because I'm a half supporter or anything like that. There's no reason behind it other than the fact that I don't want to see my team fail. And, you know, we're at a stage in the season now where, granted, we are playing Arsenal, but, you know, we can have a bit more of a go than what we did last night. Heads went down after the second goal. And, I think we're better than that as a team. and as a club, and I don't want to watch that as a supporter.
Phil, I want your take on this. What about Chris Wilder's comments post-match? There are a lot of broken and damaged players out there because this is what the league can do to you. What do you make of that, Phil?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those. We've got a championship team. So if we're going into the Premier League with a championship team, there's only so far we can go. I know we've done it before. I think we've got a tad lucky. I don't think the Premier League were expecting us to play like we did when we went up with Chris Wilder before. Whereas this time, I think, you know, they sort of know what we're about and we don't have the drive and desire this season. That the players are broken after the results that we've got, and there's nothing more that can be said. I'd say I agree with him, to be honest, and sort of investment and stuff like that.
It's Bournemouth next in the South Coast. Will you travel, Phil?
No, I'll go with my granddad. He didn't really have the legs for it. I'm a very much a home supporter.
But even still,
you know, to go down to Bournemouth and expect a result with the way that we're playing at the moment, it's
a big ask.
But,
sure.
But we're hopeful. I think that's what we are as a fan base. We're hopeful, and I think you know, it's evident what's going to happen. We've just got to hope that we next season we put a bit of money into the players and into the club, and we can go a bit further.
Phil, appreciate your time and your call. James, good morning. Sheffield United fan, are you hopeful? I don't know what hopeful means, but are you hopeful?
Not at all. Good morning. Good morning, all. Not at all. I'm absolutely distraught at seeing our team capitulate like this. And going back to Simon's comments, Chris Wilder's post-match comments, whether it's right or wrong, he's a fan like us. He's a real passionate fan. So he's going to be more dramatic after the match than most managers. He wasn't composed, but that's the way he's a very emotional person. I don't blame Chris Wilder for this. I didn't blame Paul Beckenbottom for this. You get promoted for the championship and you weaken your squad. You've also got a situation at the end of this season, you've got so many players out of contract. It's not a case of rebuilding, it's a case of building. And my fear is we'll be bottom end championship next season.
Oof. And what about, I mean, you heard Prince Abdullah speak to me in Covent Garden in London at the end of last season and saying, it's just got on top of me. I need to spend more time with my family. So with all due respect to everybody, I'm out of here. Well, he's not out of there.
He's still there. He's not out of here.
No.
I mean, if that is the case, I feel for him. I'm sure it is very, very stressful. But, you know, he's been very cute as the Prince because he's gone on a couple of the fans' forums, YouTube channels, thinking he can get the fans on side. The fans, to be honest with you, have been so apathetic. They're having their bellies tickled at the moment because there's none of this, you know, what's happening, we want our club back. There's nothing. You see the fans, you know, streaming out last night. I will be going to Bournemouth. I'm actually cycling to Bournemouth. I'm doing that for a local hospital, a children's hospital.
Oh, brilliant. So well Bournemouth. Done, James. Well
I'll
done.
I'll carry on following my team.
Well done.
But the Prince has got to go. He's got to sell. I don't know what he's asking for the club. It's probably too much. That's diminishing every hour. He got the club for a steal in the first place because of the legal wranglings with Kevin McCabe. But I think most fans are coming around to the opinion now. This owner, if he's feeling that way, he's got to go.
Simon, do you sympathise with James here?
Yeah.
And regards the ownership?
Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, I don't think, with due respect to Kevin, you know, he was pulling up trees for a period of time and he did a deal with the Prince that was the deal that he did and ultimately didn't like it and tried to renege on it and couldn't do that. I mean, Sheffield United have spent, what, £58 million on players in this in the promotion season, i.e. what they bought in the first window, and they sold about £25 million. So their net spend has been £33 million. I don't think that keeps you in the league, but what it does do is it gives you... I know they've lost Sanderberg, but they brought a decent player in Christian Hammer, who's not a bad player, and a few other players. I think that Sheffield United should be looking more competitive. I don't think Luton have spent any money. The two sides, to me, are comparable. Both of them were relegation candidates, but it's about how you get relegated. It's not about whether you're getting relegated. And Sheffield United are going down with a degree of embarrassment to their fans, and I don't think that's right. I think they should be dying in their boots.
What do you think of some of the fans chucking it after 16 minutes?
It's a balancing act, isn't it? I'm always in the camp of saying that supporters are supposed to support, but you've got to give them something to support. there is an idea that, you know, and Northern fans tend to be very invested in their teams, very committed behind their teams. And I'm not diminishing the South, but there's lots of other things going on in the South.
Right, right.
But Northern fans are the strongest fans, in my view. And so if they're walking out, it's because they don't want to watch what they're being served up. And that's not just because they're not accepting defeats, it's because the manner of which the team is getting beaten.
John, do you fall into that category? Sheffield United fan, you did not want to watch any more of what you were watching.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Simon.
Morning.
We travel up from Bolton to the games. I've been a season ticket holder now for over 20 years. It's the first time I've ever walked out the stadium at that time. It was just diabolical. I mean, that was the only word for it. I mean, you know, there's probably a lot of people who'll say, you know, you shouldn't have done that. But, I mean, it's just been so a gut-wrenching season, to be quite honest with you. And, you know, the only terrible downside was we ended up going round to the sister-in-law's. So, I mean, it wasn't the best swap, really, you know.
Out of the frying pan into the fire there, John. Are you looking forward to life in the Championship?
To be honest with you, I actually agree with a lot of what has been said. I honestly think that it'll be a massive struggle. The overall feeling is that, you know, potentially we could end up in League One in the next couple of years.
Didn't you guys think that you were going to struggle last time round, and when you got relegated last time? And Heckingbottom did a really good job, and there wasn't a lot of resource, and you weren't given a lot of money, and yet you managed to get yourself together and you get yourself promoted.
He did, Simon. I couldn't agree more with that sentiment, and I think that was why, you know, Paul should have been left with the reins. You know, he's took the side up,
and
if we were to go down, I think he would have been, you know, top of the list to stabilise the club. What we're in now is with Chris Wilder coming back in, I don't really understand why it's been done. And to be honest with you, I think it will cause more trouble than it's worth in the long run, particularly at the end of the season.
Okay, John. You know, tell me this, you didn't walk out the sister-in-law's early, did you?
No, but she actually had the match on, so I mean, it was...
I couldn't get away.
I wish it just drove home, really.
Torture all round. John, thanks for the call. A lot to be done at Sheffield United. By God, there isn't half.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The world's most dangerous download.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
in another sport, what is actually going on and off the track, Simon? It seems that F1 is in a complete state of flux. Senior figures at Red Bull have held clear the air talks aimed at defusing the infighting over the future of Christian Horner. And then in a separate development altogether, Max Verstappen's dad, Verstappen Senior, I'm joking, Jos Verstappen, isn't planning to attend any of the forthcoming races in his own effort to calm down what is termed a toxic situation. F1 correspondent for The Independent, Kieran Jackson, joins us. Kieran, what's going on in the world of F1? Seems like it's in meltdown.
Hi, guys. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly an interesting situation which has developed over the last week. I mean, just to get you up to speed, like you said, Christian Horner held talks with Max Verstappen's manager, Roman Van Meulen, yesterday in Dubai, off the back of the first Grand Prix of the season on Saturday in Bahrain. And essentially, like you said, it was clear the air talks and de-escalation, I think. There's a situation whereby Max Verstappen's father, Jos, who's not a Red Bull employee but holds a lot of sway for obvious reasons, basically said that Christian Horner's position was untenable over the weekend as a result of the whole saga surrounding his investigation into inappropriate behaviour and then the leak of texts allegedly from him to the female complainant. And so you've got a situation whereby the team star driver, his father, such a close person to him, is wanting his team boss out. And it's it makes for a pretty uncomfortable situation for the team, who are the most dominant team in F1 history at the moment. They're winning at a canter. Verstappen won comfortably again in the first race on Saturday, and he's hot favourite to win a fourth straight title. So the irony of the whole situation, whereby they've got such tensions within camp, comes at a time when the team are doing so well.
I mean, obviously, if you look at his father's track record, I mean, he's not a particularly upstanding member of the community, is he? And I'm surprised.
What's he been up to?
Oh, attempted murder, domestic assaults, and a whole raft of other lovely things.
Okay.
But what's the underlying reasons behind this? I mean, obviously, Red Bull are a successful team and doing very well, and I can see the currency being made out of it by people like Toto Wolff that are calling for certain things because it upsets the apple cart of Red Bull. But what's happening inside the Red Bull environment that's driving this agenda? If he's behaved badly, he's behaved badly. And the accusations are that they've marked their own homework, and ultimately any charges he's had to face, they've faced internally. But he has been cleared. So where is all this infighting and this seeming agenda to oust Horner coming from?
Yeah, the politics at play within Red Bull are fascinating, really. I think it all stems from an underlying tension between Helmut Marko, who is the team's motorsport advisor, long-term motorsport advisor, and tension between him and Christian Horner, which kind of emerged last year behind the scenes. Marko is a close ally of the Verstappens. He's the person who progressed Max to become the youngest F1 driver ever at 17 years old. So he's always been very firmly a favourite of the Verstappens. So I think Horner quite quietly wanted to get Marko out of Red Bull last year. That didn't happen. It didn't materialise. Marko signed a new contract. So I think that is the underlying tension within Red Bull. You've got these two separate camps where you've got Marko alongside the Verstappens and then Horner, who is, you know, he's been in charge of that team since its inception in 2005. He holds such a large amount of sway. He's got the backing of the Thai billionaire who owns the majority of the overarching company. So that is essentially the divide you have.
As if all that wasn't enough, though, Kieran, now we've got reports claiming the FIA president, Mohammed Ben Sulayem, is under investigation for allegedly attempting to interfere with a race result at last year's Saudi Arabia Grand Prix. What's he been up to?
Yeah, so that's a story which emerged on the BBC yesterday, that Ben Sulayem, who wasn't at the race in Saudi Arabia last year, he phoned up and asked for quite firmly for the stewards to change their mind. Essentially, Fernando Alonso had been demoted from third to fourth due to a subsequent penalty. And then a few hours after that, he did get promoted back up to third and therefore reinstated his podium. So it's no coincidence that it's emerged just a year on and amongst all this saga and ahead of the next race in Jeddah this weekend, I don't think. But again, that has come from a whistleblower within the FIA. So that's another situation which shows the politics and kind of the skullduggery within Formula One, right?
I mean, so what's the nuance? What's the context and nuance of this alleged decision to interfere or to involve himself in a decision, what would be the material reason for him doing that? Is there some gain in it for him? Does he have some partisanship somewhere that we're missing? What would be the benefit of him involving himself in a decision involving Fernando Alonso?
Yeah, it's a very good question, Simon. On the face of it, there isn't a real benefit to it, but it's just a sign of Ben Sulayem and his kind of persona and how much he wants control over the FIA and over the sport. Prior to last year, he had to step back from F1 involvement because F1, the commercial arm of the sport, were unhappy with his involvement and poking his nose in everything, basically. So that's the underlying reason. Nothing to do with that.
Yeah. Kieran, finally, what do you think the end game is regarding Horner and Red Bull?
Yeah, it's so difficult to say because if you asked me last Wednesday when he got cleared of the inappropriate behaviour, I'd have said it was kind of done and dusted. But then 24 hours later, the text emerged. I think Max Verstappen speaks to the media tomorrow in Jeddah ahead of the next race in Saudi this weekend. And it will just be fascinating to see what he says about whether he agrees or even echoes his father's comments about Christian Horner. Because if he does, it kind of does make Horner's position untenable because Max is the star of that team. But if not, I kind of feel like Christian Horner's kind of got past the worst of it. So it'll be fascinating to see where it comes out. I mean, who knows whether there's more text on the way or whatnot. So I find it difficult to predict what will happen in this sport, that's for sure.
Okay, Kieran Jackson, F1 correspondent for The Independent. Thank you very much indeed.
100% engagement. Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Simon, here's a question for you. Are manufacturers missing a trick when it comes to producing football boots for women? Would you believe it? A committee of MPs claim that sport, quotes, must do better when it comes to making football boots specifically for female players. Now, there is a serious note to this as well, because this comes amidst a high number of anterior cruciate ligament injuries in the women's game. A female footballers between 3 and 6, are they more likely to sustain an ACL injury than their male counterparts? It would seem they are. The Women's Equality Committee criticises brands for making only a handful of boots specifically designed for women's bodies. And they've expressed a concern that those that do exist are rarely stocked by the UK's leading sports retailers. So is that right? If you are a female player and you go into a shop to buy yourself a pair of boots, are you struggling to get the boots that you want? Are you invariably ending up playing in men's boots? Let me tell you, former England striker Leanne Sanderson joins us live. Leanne, always good to speak to you. What is your take on this? I mean, presumably you knew about this situation.
Yeah, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for having me on as always.
Leanne.
You know what's interesting? I think obviously there's been this, I call it like a pandemic of ACLs in the women's game. It's really bad. There's been 6 in the last 10 days, which has been really, really bad. So the boots, there's a big problem here, Jim, and there's a lot of people talk about research, and I always think, you know, I'm all for people making things better, but it's like, what does that research even mean? And I think we're not going to start to see real change within the next 5 to 10 years. I don't think it's going to be now. And, you know, growing up, I wore David Beckham's boots and, you know, and they were the male boots. So I think there's a lot of, like, we should have our own boots. There's no doubt in that. But I don't think solely the reason why people are doing their knees. I think, I'm not a doctor, but I've done this injury myself. And my opinion is that we've gone from training twice a week to training every day like the men, and we're not the men. So, you know, and that's what I honestly believe. And there was no research done in that. There was no guidance behind that. Our bodies are different. And, you know, that's the reality, Jim. So I think that we do need our own female-specific boot, no doubt in that. Why wouldn't we? Mia Hamm had one about 15 years ago and everybody bought it, so why wouldn't they? But what I will say is that the fact that we've gone from 0 to 100, we want the women's game to be where it's at now and continue to grow. But I think, you know, they're reactive as opposed to being proactive with all this type of stuff.
I'll put it out there. You know, are there mums out there with daughters who play football? Mums and dads, your young daughter wants to play football, your teenage daughter wants to play, and you struggle getting the right footwear for her. Is that actually the case? 810-89, you can fire in with that. Leanne, you've spoken very well. Stay with us. Simon, I'm surprised here that the women in the game are literally finding it hard to get a boot that suits them, never mind fit them.
Yeah, I mean, clearly you have to look at the reality of why that is. And if there's commercial opportunity, you can make the same argument about a variety of things in women's sport, right? If the argument is that they're alighting upon new information, the sport is developing, and the manufacturing opportunities behind it. Because let's be clear, the boot manufacturers are commercial entities. If they haven't looked at this as a commercial opportunity, that's because they're looking at women's sport through a prism that they're evolving towards the understanding that it's now becoming a growth industry. That doesn't make it sexist, it doesn't make it misogynistic, and it doesn't make the observation that the committee made have any real resonance, which is we have no doubt that a health issue of similar magnitude affecting elite male footballers would have received a faster, more thorough and better coordinated response. Now, that's a leap, and that's divisive language, because there's no empirical evidence for that.
But they probably would have.
Well, only because of the state of the games. You could make this argument now and say, well, then I believe that the broadcasters are downright remiss. Why aren't the broadcasters paying women's football £100 million, £200 million a year so that women's football can have more money involved in it, so it can have more research done, so there can be more value put on it? Because the commercial value of this of women's football at this moment in time is beginning to develop. And so that means that the manufacturers need to address it. If it's a growth marketplace, do you think a manufacturer of a sports apparel that saw an opportunity in this space would say, I tell you what, I'm not doing any of that because I don't want to make any money? Of course they would do that.
But it appears here, I hear what Simon's saying, Leanne, but it appears here the manufacturers are missing a trick.
That's the
I mean, they missed a trick with Mary Earps. I mean, they didn't even sell the women's goalkeeper jersey. That's flabbergasting to me that that's the situation. I can't get my head around it. And then they did it, sold out in 10 minutes. So, you know, the reality is that I just think, Jim, ultimately, it comes down to young girls want to aspire to be like the lionesses, be people like myself, be in broadcasting and the scene is believing. Now, at the end of the day, it has to be there for people to buy it. That's the reality. Like I said, I grew up wearing David Beckham's boots. I used to want his boots every single time the Predators came out. I don't think that was the reason why I got injured. And I think right now everybody's kind of jumping on this bandwagon of why is this ACL injury stuff happening? But I was always kind of, I would listen to all my coaches and what they told me, but how do I know that that was going to be right? We spend about an hour in the gym before training now. You know, I do that because my coaches have told me to do that. But how is that benefiting me? Yes. We train the day before a game. I personally didn't think that was good for me as a female player to be training the day before. That's me personally.
Right.
But we've been told, you know, you've got to do this because that's what your coach is telling you. And unfortunately, I genuinely believe if there was this many ACLs in the men's game, you know, our equivalent in the women's game of doing their knee, you know, Beth Mead, Leah Williamson, that's the men's version of, you know, Harry Kane and Declan Rice. And if four or five England men's players had done their ACL, then I think more people would have a problem.
But that's only simply because of the finances that are in the respective sports. It's nothing to do with a predetermined attitude and outlook that the women's sport doesn't have any value and there shouldn't be paid any attention to, which is some of the underlying assertions that are being made in this report. And I have no issue with the evolution of intelligence to understand, like you've alluded to, Leanne, about the changing in routines that bring out different stresses. The ACL conundrum may well be a variety of different things, but it's the underlying division in the report that I do not like, which is the necessity to compare to what's happening in the men's game to what's happening in the women's game. Because you can make that argument wherever you want to, then you should be equally outraged, as I made a point about earlier on, that the broadcasters pay virtually nothing for women's football and pay a fortune for men's. Because people need to understand that the reasons why there's not so much development in women's football for things like research to be able to prepare for challenges like this is because the finances aren't there. So if the finances aren't there...
Is that fair, Leanne?
Yeah, but the thing is, I didn't want to cut Simon off, so I feel like I never get enough time with you guys and we could talk all day. But these people are doing these reports. What have they done to help the situation previously? Absolutely nothing. So it's all very well them coming out. And I actually agree with what Simon's saying. It's all very well with them coming out with these reports and the MPs and stuff that like that now, but they've probably never seen a women's game in their life. Maybe some of them have, but I imagine they probably haven't. And it seems right now, everybody's coming out with all this kind of wording and spiel and saying we want to do this. We'll do something then.
Yeah.
Well, you know, talking is cheap. You've got to do something about it.
Yeah. I mean, Simon, look at what Puma have said. Leading manufacturer. Puma told the committee of MPs the industry was, quote, just starting to understand that there were multiple differences between the male and female footballer.
Yeah.
Ranging from biomechanics, bone density, and running action to the monthly cycle. Where the hell have Puma been?
But hold on. They're a manufacturer. And it's the industry's responsibility to be able to identify the differences. Not a commercial operator that provides a piece of apparel So you're suggesting that it's incumbent upon them to look at the manufacture of their socks in conjunction with how women's legs fit into them. They would do that because of the nature of the construct. But what we're suggesting is it's the responsibility of a boot manufacturer. No, it's the responsibility of the bloody industry.
No, but these boot manufacturers, like a giant like Puma, has got research capability.
And that's fine. And the reasons why they may not have alighted upon this, and this is a thorny subject, but it's a reasonable one because it's a nuance behind every conversation, is if they don't see a commercial opportunity, then they're not going to spend hundreds of millions of pounds on research and development. Well, there's no now. If they now understand that the explosion in women's football is a legitimate one, has sustainability, and is going to be a going concern, you can bet your bottom dollar that Puma and Nike and Adidas and whoever else think that they need to be in this industry will be making sure that there's boots specific for young girls and professional footballers.
Do you think the FA should be pushing more on this, Leanne?
Yes. Yeah, I definitely do. And to be fair to them, you know, myself and the FA have an indifferent relationship based on previous situations. But I always believe in people can do things to make things better. Now, like I said, actions speak louder than words. There's all these different companies out there now, like Well HQ, that I think are good. And there's loads of things they're trying to do. But I just want to see action. I don't want to keep hearing people say we're doing research. And again, probably very rarely me and Simon agree all the time, but I agree with what he's saying, because again, these businessmen and women are not just, they might as well flush their money down the toilet. You know, if they're going to put their money into something, they want to make money out of it. And these smart business people will do that. So, you know, I hope things will get better. I just don't want to see every single weekend one of my teammates is getting injured all the time.
No, fair
and
point.
It's not down to Puma, and it's not down to Nike. It's not down to Adidas. It's down to the clubs as well that need to take responsibility. It's the clubs as well.
Yeah, good point. Very briefly, there's a good message. Jim, Simon, Leanne, my daughter plays ladies football to championship level in Scotland. So reasonable standards trying to get her boots, but it's a nightmare. We end up buying the top end Nike ones, presumably for boys, at over 200 quid, as these are the ones that fit her best. Mm. So they're not out there. They're not out in the market. Leanne, while we have you, Euro 2025 championship qualifying draw has been made. England's women's group, France, Sweden and the Republic of Ireland. What do you think?
Oh, it's a hard one, Jim. Honestly, that's a really tough group. I mean, obviously, in England, the reigning champions, Serena's back-to-back, you know, finalists with the Netherlands and England. That's a tough group.
Yeah.
France is going to be difficult. Sweden, Republic of Ireland, you know, we should beat them. They've just done the new management. But that's a really tough group, really tough group.
That's a tough one. Scotland, meantime, Serbia, Slovakia and Israel. That's a cakewalk for our girls. Don't forget, you can hear Leanne every Monday from 7 on the Women's Football Show on TalkSport 2. Leanne Sanderson, as always, our thanks to you.
The world's most dangerous download.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, TalkSport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Please leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast from. We're back tomorrow to bring you the best of the show.